Welcome to the podcast.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
I appreciate you tuning in today.
Well, I'm here.
Well, not you. I met the listeners.
Oh, you're not glad.
Okay. Notre Dame fire. We start there today and talk about debunking the... There's already kind of social media, like, photoshops of, like, I think they have Osama bin Laden, like, coming in on a cable, like he's in Mission Impossible.
Dead. He crawled out of the sea.
Like, it does not seem to be that at this point,
no.
Although the final, there's no final, answer on what caused the fire. It does look like it was construction to do with this whole update they were doing there.
I have a different take on this that I think maybe you will enjoy. I think this is a blessing in disguise, and we can talk about that. Coming up in the podcast.
We also have the Joe Biden update that you did on TV last night, kind of walking you through part of that. I will say, you know, some of it's a little difficult to listen to and try to understand all these moving parts because there's a lot of people involved in this with Joe Biden's actions in China, as well as some organizations you might not be familiar with. Easiest way to understand it is if you go to blazetv.com/Glenn and you can watch it on the chalkboard from last night's TV show. Now you can sign up. You can use the promo code Glenn, save $10. If you want to cancel during the free trial, I mean, I think you're evil and probably a communist, but go ahead and do that if you want. But we should watch this. You should know this information because if Biden steps in, he's going to be the front runner. There's been four polls that come out in the last few days. He's ahead in three of them, two of them by double digits over Bernie Sanders. So he is entering this race as the front runner. We need to know everything we can about him.
Yeah. Also, we have Ami Horowitz on something that happened at UNC Duke. That is really frightening, truly frightening.
Especially of how overt it was.
Yeah, and no one is covering this anti-Semitism way beyond anything that I've seen in America that is all sanctioned by two universities, all that and more, coming up on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Triot Mobile is a phone service that will give you all of the great coverage that you want. They're just not going to take the money from you and then invest that in causes that you don't believe in, like Planned Parenthood. Patriot Mobile actually is going to let you invest your money into the causes that you believe in. But most of these cell companies, they give all kinds of money to crazy, crazy causes that you work hard against.
It's true. Why do that? You can go with Patriot Mobile. They were created to solve that problem. They're the only conservative cell phone company in America. Go to patriotmobile.com/blaze. Get started today. When you use the offer code blaze, they're going to waive the activation fee for up to two lines. patriotmobile.com/blaze or 1-800-A-PATRIOT is the place to go.
Sitting in a basilica at 570 A.D., in the heart of Jerusalem lay a crown of thorns. They had been there for a while. Then the wars started, and the emperors started coming from Constantinople, now Istanbul. The crown of thorns and a relic of the true cross then went to Istanbul, where it stayed until 1238. Things started to get a little dicey for the Emperor Baldwin in Constantinople, and he had already mortgaged everything he had, including the crown of thorns. That's when King Louis, in 1238, decided to see if he could buy the relics and bring them to Paris. He was looking to unite people, and he thought the crown of thorns would be the thing that could help him do it. He paid three times what it cost to build the cathedral that it was kept in. It was not originally kept in Notre Dame. It was moved to Notre Dame after the relic barely escaped the French Revolution. In the French Revolution, they were collectivist socialists, anti-capitalists, anti-religionists, anti-God. And they desecrated Notre Dame. They had sex on the altar and sacrifices. They said it was a temple of reason, not a temple of God. In the chapel where the true cross and the crown of thorns were kept, much of it was destroyed. Somehow or another, those two relics escaped, and they lay safe until after the revolution and 1806. 1806 is when Napoleon said, we should move these to temporarily to Notre Dame for safekeeping. Well, they were moved there, and they were never moved again until yesterday. These are the crown jewels of France, and it was a extraordinarily brave priest that went into the flames to grab these relics. Whether they are truly the true cross and the crown of thorns, we'll never really know. They've been dated to the right era, to the right time, but whether they are the true cross and the true crown of thorns, we don't know. And there are only about 70 thorns, they say, 70 thorns left. Because at the time, King Louis would give one of the thorns to people who had done something that he favored. Now it's preserved in a crystal case, a round crystal case that was made in the late 1800s. And it is only out a couple of times. One on Good Friday, which is coming up on this Friday, and Easter. Usually it is laying away from prying eyes. I was struck yesterday by, I will never see Notre Dame. And it is what I had said recently. I had told my family and I had told you, for different reasons, that these churches and these cathedrals and these monuments will be lost in the coming years. All I could think of was, we had planned a trip to Paris just this last summer, and I canceled it because we were in the middle of doing business. And I had told my family, we have got to get to Paris before it burns down to the ground and you won't see things like the cathedral anymore. I said it.
You said it multiple times. Honestly, the second I saw Notre Dame on fire on television, the first thing I thought about was Glenn saying this, because I thought it was just, you know, it's one of those things that are just so random that Glenn just blurts out. You're like, what are you even talking about?
Yeah.
But yeah, you said it, I mean, multiple times. I remember.
But I said it because of ISIS.
ISIS. You were saying this is targeted.
Yeah, I think this is actually a blessing, and we can get into that in a minute.
Yeah, listen, though, because I think there's a case. Well, listen to this. This is Glenn in 2015. We dug this one up for you here. Listen, here's Glenn talking inexplicably about Notre Dame being destroyed.
Because of what is happening, I believe London, France, Germany, Greece, I believe these things could be destroyed in what is coming. And especially because, remember who you're fighting against. You're fighting against Islamic extremists. The places that they will target will be places like the Cathedral of Notre Dame. You could go back to France in 15 years from now, and it might be free. It might not be. It might be free. But the Cathedral of Notre Dame may be gone.
Now, that's 2015. Here he is in another show. This is on TV in 2015 as well.
So when I was talking to Tim Ferriss, he said, so what do you see coming? And I said, Paris is in trouble.
Paris is in trouble.
And I said, they're going to hit the Cathedral of Notre Dame. And I said, it's just a gut feeling. So now this comes out over the weekend that they are doing Paris as their first stop. And they're saying it's the Eiffel Tower. It's not.
Now, there's one minor distinction. It wasn't ISIS. It was construction workers.
Okay, but wait a minute. Hang on just a second. That was 2015. In 2016, ISIS targeted Notre Dame. And 2017, they tried to blow it up with a car bomb.
I was going
to
say, like, this is the fact that Notre Dame caught on fire yesterday was not what proved you right. It was these two, I mean, multiple attacks and attempts to get rid of Notre Dame by ISIS.
Yes.
Like, this has already happened.
Yes. And that's why I say I think this is a blessing. And we'll get into the conspiracy theories and everything else and debunk all of that. And I want to say that again, debunk all of that.
We should be clear, though. They're not saying for sure what happened.
No,
but it looks to be.
It looks strongly to be.
Related to their renovations.
Correct.
But we do not know that yet.
Correct.
That is not confirmed.
Correct.
By anybody.
And we'll talk about all of that. But let me just say this. I think if it was construction, this is actually a blessing. Imagine if we knew today that ISIS had gone in and started a fire in Notre Dame and had burned that thing just as badly as it is, had burned Notre Dame down. Think about what people are saying in France now. This, it's their White House, if you will. I can't think of a more precious building in America than this.
And you mentioned the Crown of Thorns. There was a piece of the Crown of Thorns in the spire. To protect the building.
Wow.
And that's obviously lost. If you watch the video, the spire collapses.
Yeah.
There's no way that they're going to be able to get that. I can't imagine, unless it was protected in some strength, you know, in a way to defend against just this. Maybe they thought of that. But that's how serious it is. I mean, this is foundational.
Yeah, this is like blowing up or burning down Buckingham Palace. This is the symbol of France and longer than the Eiffel Tower. Bringing down the Eiffel Tower is bad. Notre Dame is what is left of the spiritual side of France. And it, because it is so ingrained in French history, it has become almost spiritual, even for those who don't believe in God. It is a sacred place, even for those who don't understand the sacred the way a religious person might. So it is actually, in a way, it could help defuse things. By taking this and removing this as a target is actually probably a very good thing long run.
That's a different way of looking at that. But
imagine what today would be like if we found out last night if they had blown that up.
And there are a million conspiracies going around, but be clear that if it was ISIS and it was confirmed, there'd be a million conspiracy theorists saying they were only blaming Muslims because they wanted to inflame tensions and create war. So like, and there's no side is
clean.
Innocent on this one.
Yeah. That's why we want to be very, very clear that it looks like it is not anything to do with extremism of any kind.
So,
Extremism was going on all directions in France. Just this last weekend, they told the police, I love this, that you can actually load your guns now and you can shoot a yellow vest protester if you feel you need to.
Do they know that guns become dangerous when you load them?
I don't. It's France. Probably not.
Okay.
They
know.
They're still trying to figure, what is this, a bullet? I don't understand.
Here comes Adolf. We can load our guns now.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks. Last Thursday on television, I did part one, a major chalkboard explaining how Joe Biden's son, Hunter, came to be on the board of Ukraine's largest private natural gas company, even though he has absolutely no natural gas experience. And even though the company, the natural gas company in Ukraine, was run by a notoriously corrupt oligarch, and $1.5 billion of U.S. money just simply disappeared through his fingers. As bad as things look in the Ukraine, it's the tip of the iceberg compared to what Joe Biden and John Kerry set up for their sons while they were vice president and secretary of state. I'm going to lay out quickly here the business deals in China And it wasn't just massive money changing hands. This is profiting from companies that are actively trying to steal from and gain a competitive advantage over the U.S. This is a challenge to our national security. If anyone thinks that Joe Biden should be the candidate, I warn you, he is not on our side. In 2010, well, let me start here. 2008, the election happened. 2009, Joe Biden was made the vice president. Just a few months later, his son, Hunter, decided to start up a new business with Chris Hines. That's John Kerry's stepson. So now the vice president and the soon-to-be secretary of state are in business together, and they're doing an investment fund. Neither of them have any international investment background. So they bring in John Kerry's former finance manager for his campaign, who happened to be a roommate of theirs in college. They come together and they form something called Rosemont Seneca Partners. This is international investments. So they do that in 2009. And then just a few months later, in 2010, Joe Biden is meeting with President Hu from China in Washington as part of a national security summit. What?
Who?
You really have to, you want to go?
I just want to, you just
President
said,
Hu.
Who?
Joe, while Joe Biden was in this meeting, Hunter Biden was in China with his two Rosemont Seneca partners, John Kerry's stepson and the former campaign finance manager, Devon Archer. The trio had meetings. At the same time, Daddy is meeting with the head of China. The sons are meeting now with the executives from China's largest banks, also China's sovereign wealth fund and their social security funds. A year later, Joe Biden meets with Chinese officials for the U.S. in the China's Strategic Economic Dialogue in Washington. 2 weeks later, Hunter Biden and his partners meet in Taiwan with the same Chinese financial guys that they met in China in 2010, plus some new ones. In the book, Secret Empires, investigative author Peter Schweitzer says this to give you an idea of how important these meetings were. Peter writes, "It's as if the son of the Chinese premier held a single meeting with the heads of Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Merrill Lynch, and Blackstone. Except in this case, these were government entities with trillions of dollars of capital to invest." In December 2013, Joe Biden traveled to China on an extended official trip with him. He took on Air Force Two Hunter Biden and his daughter. They were greeted by a red carpet delegation and children bearing flowers, and Vice President met with President Xi for over 5 hours, and they talked about everything. Now, what was Hunter doing? Well, Hunter was there for business as well. We don't know exactly who he met with or what was discussed, but we do know that just 2 weeks later, a deal was signed with Rosemont Seneca and the Bank of China. Now, 10 days after his trip, he closes on a deal with the Bank of China. This is the most powerful financial institution in China. And they form a joint venture with this startup company that has no one? How's that possible? Rosemont Seneca and the Bank of China merge and create a giant investment fund called BHR, Bohai Harvest Rosemont. Now think about this. The government-owned Bank of China funding a business that it co-owned with the son of the U.S. Vice President and the son of the U.S. Secretary of State. So this is Chinese government funding, and all of the Chinese government banking officials starting a new business in China with the son of the vice president and the secretary of state. That's quite amazing. And since the bank is government owned, it meant that business was completely intertwined with the communist government's goals. But don't worry, nothing bad happened. Well, kind of. Now think of all of the foreign firms that are trying to do business with China that have established records. How did Rosemont Seneca score this sweetheart deal? And this is a sweetheart deal. It got to operate in a brand new Shanghai free trade zone where it could use $1.5 billion of Chinese government money to invest in China or any place in the world. Any place they decided that it would be good. And they brought those dollars home to the U.S., which was really great. First, however, they invested in something else. Now, remember, this is something that no other country, Goldman Sachs, doesn't have this relationship. How did this investment house, with two guys that don't have any real experience in this, a brand new firm with very few, if any, clients at the time, get a deal that Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase can't get? Well, they made a couple of investments in technology. In 2014, BHR, that's the Biden Hunter Biden organization with the Bank of China, invested in the China General Nuclear Power Corporation. Now this is wonderful. CGN is a Chinese government-owned nuclear power company that sold off a stake of the company to outside investors. Now here's the problem. At the same time that Hunter Biden and his group with China is buying this, CGN was under FBI investigation for stealing U.S. nuclear secrets. For years, CGN actively paid informants in the U.S. to smuggle nuclear secrets out. And the FBI probe, by the way, resulted in several Americans getting arrested. Yet while the FBI probe was going on, the son of the vice president and the son of the secretary of state, which was in business with the Bank of China, bought a stake in this company being investigated. Even after the arrests were made, Rosemont Seneca did not alter its relationship with BHR. Neither did BHR divest from the Chinese government-owned company that was stealing our nuclear secrets. Now, how is that possible? How did that not even get into the news? Here's the other one. In 2015, BHR partnered with the Aviation Industry Corporation of China. Now, what is that? The Aviation Industry Corporation of China is basically their Hewlett-Packard. Lockheed Martin. It is their big aerospace company. They build all of the fighters, all of the drones, absolutely everything. So here's Hunter Biden and Christopher Hines in a business deal with the Bank of China buying into AVIC, the big military contractor. And they decide that they need to invest in some new technology. And so they bring some of that money home. BHR bought 49% of a company here in America called Henegies. And AVIC bought 51%. So now they own 100% of this great company here in America. What do they do? Well, this company makes precision parts. And they specialize in anti-vibration technology. And the technology that they build and the parts that they make are known as dual use by the U.S. State Department, which means you can also use this on bombers, stealth bombers, and any kind of machine for war. Now, usually that has to be approved by the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S., and it was approved. Quickly, no big deal. But why not? I mean, the Secretary of State's son and the Vice President's son are the ones doing the buying. According to Schweitzer, a U.S. intelligence community has long recognized that the Chinese government is committed to acquiring Western machine tool technology, especially the kind of tech where it is difficult to distinguish between civilian and military use of the equipment. Also, it wasn't like BHR didn't know what it was getting into when it said, oh, you know what? We just did the nuclear deal, and that didn't turn out well. Of course, we still have that. But, yeah, they were spying against our country. We don't want to do another deal like that. A year before Hunter Biden and Christopher Hines decided to form a partnership with AVIC, the Wall Street Journal reported how this war plant stole technology related to the U.S. Air Force's F-35 stealth fighter. They stole that information, and then they used it, manufactured the product, and put it into the stealth fighter for the Chinese. That's the company that the vice president's son invests in and then helps buy a critical machining operation here in America. So if you're keeping score, the company owned by Hunter Biden and John Kerry's stepson and their friend became the Chinese conduit to buy U.S. technology. Their company was also used to invest in Chinese nuclear power, helping support the company that had worked for years to steal U.S. nuclear secrets. Meanwhile, as all of these deals and investments progressed, Vice President Joe Biden and Secretary of State Joe Kerry were having ongoing sensitive talks with the Chinese government about multiple issues, including China's effort in 2014 to control the South China Sea. You tell me if Joe Biden, if he loves his country more than self. Is he putting himself or his family over the safety and security of our nation? In some cultures, this would not go well for somebody who is doing this to their own country. It is incredible to me that none of this has even been on the news. If Joe Biden runs, and this is not uncovered by the mainstream media, you will know he's not alone. If it's not covered by places like Fox, you will know, wow, the Democrats are not the only ones doing this.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Steve Katz is with us. He is the producer of Unplanned. He was an attorney for a long time until he moved to California, went out to the entertainment industry, and now is the executive producer of the movie Unplanned. Welcome to the program, Steve. How are you?
Thank you, Glenn. I'm great. How are you?
Very, very good. Congratulations on Unplanned.
Well, I appreciate it. It's been a labor of love, and it's been pushing a boulder up a hill, as they say in Hollywood, which is what it takes to get any movie made. But this one particularly, so I think we had to push a boulder up a hill wearing swimsuits in the snow, frankly, to get this movie made. But it has been kind of wildly successful and has exceeded our expectations. And more than anything, it's been really successful in changing people's minds and at least opening them to the possibility of looking at some critical issues in a new way.
So I will tell you, Steve, I didn't want to see this movie because I thought it would be, you know, the same crappy fare of a Christian movie that was preachy and everybody who was not on the right side was evil. And you guys did such a great job of making this not that kind of movie, where I think it does reach a wide audience. I just talked to somebody last night who came up almost in tears and said, I have to thank you. I brought my family to see Unplanned, and I would never have gone, and I took the kids, and you know, they're teenagers, and they said our conversations about this are completely different now.
Well, that's right, and I think, you know, so much of the credit goes to Abby Johnson, because her amazing true story, which is the foundation for this film, is just incredible, because she's someone who actually lived this story. She began as an ardent feminist. She was very pro-choice, and over time, she evolved when she sort of saw what what was happening. And, of course, the filmmakers, Kerry Solomon and Chuck Konzelman, are just incredible writers and directors. And, you know, you mentioned earlier that so many of the films in the faith-based space tend to be not all that great. And, you know, I've been involved in productions on both sides, but what you find in the faith-based space especially is you'll get, you know, people who believe, you know, have the beliefs, but they don't really write well. And on the other hand, you'll get people in Hollywood who see an opportunity, you know, just to make money, and they might be good writers, but they don't have the beliefs. And with Kerry and Chuck, you sort of get both.
So, Steve, I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to see it, did it really fall? We have a situation to where, and it was really apparent with Unplanned, you could not have advertising on entire networks, Lifetime, Up TV, Hallmark, HGTV, USA, Food Amazing. Network, Travel Channel, DIY, Cooking Channel. You were not welcome anywhere. So let me just talk about that first.
And K-Love, a Christian rock station, no less.
How?
You know, Glenn, I think that people, frankly, are just afraid of this topic. And they're afraid of being tarnished, and they just don't want to touch it. Frankly, we don't buy that argument, because Hollywood embraces those sort of ads for you know, pro-abortion movies all the time. And as we understand it, Sandra Bullock now has a property that she's going to be doing where she's going to play Wendy Davis, the you know, Texas state legislator who ran for governor. Does anyone really think that Google or, you know, Twitter will not be running ads for her film?
No.
It's astonishing.
Then what happened with Twitter on the opening weekend?
Yeah, so what happened with Twitter was we had had the account up for 7 months, and we had had up to, I think, about 100,000 followers or so. On opening weekend, the account was taken down on Saturday morning. No explanation given. All of a sudden, the account's not there. So what happened was our lead actress couldn't even follow her own movie on Twitter, and it caused an uproar. And to their credit, a lot of people, I think Shannon Bream at Fox and others, started, you know, tweeting Jack Dorsey saying, hey, what's going on? So they ultimately restored it a number of hours later, and, you know, the excuse that they gave us just doesn't hold water. What they said was that they thought the account may have been linked to someone who was a bad actor and had a different account taken down, and so out of an abundance of caution, you know, they took down our account. But that really sort of smells, because the account had been up for 7 months, and it's just not a coincidence that they take it down on opening weekend.
So you had to go to Congress, did you not, and testify?
Well, yes, our director, co-director Chuck Konzelman, went to Congress. He spoke before a Senate hearing with Senator Cruz, and the topic was big tech censorship of conservative ideas. And by the way, it's not just Twitter. We try to run banner ads on Google, and Google advertises, you know, the banner ads as a service that's open to anyone for any viewpoint, any legitimate viewpoint, and they simply refuse to accept our banner ads. And to make the situation worse, and this is really kind of incredible, the day after Chuck testified, Google, when you did a Google search on the film Unplanned, it brought up the poster, and next to it, it described the film as drama/propaganda. I kid you not.
Oh, my gosh.
This is the day after he testified before the Senate. And, you know, we immediately then, you know, started checking to see what they were doing with other films. And if you can believe it, the classic Nazi propaganda film Triumph of the Will by Leni Riefenstahl, they didn't mark that as propaganda.
They did not.
It was not marked as propaganda.
That's the quintessential propaganda film.
It's a Nazi propaganda film, right?
How did they do Inconvenient Truth with Al Gore? Was that propaganda?
Oh, you mean the snow hasn't all melted on Mount?
No, it hasn't. No,
I guess it's still there.
Yeah.
Any of the Michael Moore movies, any of the Che Guevara movies were not listed as propaganda. So once again, you know, we raised an outcry and they rectified it. But the question is, why should we have to do that to begin with? Why can't they just be a neutral arbiter?
So Steve, you know, as we try to break through barriers, the barriers just keep changing, and they just put a new one in front of us. I mean, you know, first you have to make the movie yourself. So we do. Then you have to get it into movie theaters, and we do. Then you have to advertise. Well, we're losing advertising. We're losing the battle on online, and we're being subjected to what I would call digital ghettoization. It's the same thing the Germans did to the Jews. Hey, talk all you want just behind this wall so nobody will see you or hear you. That's a problem.
Yeah, it is a problem, and it's just so rife with hypocrisy, because when you think about how even to this day, so many voices on the left continue to lament the blacklisting of the 1940s, and they lionize people like, you know, Dalton Trumbo and Paul Robeson, who were denied a platform and denied the opportunity to work because of their opinions. And so many of these same people on the left are doing the exact, employing the exact same tactics today. And it's like, why? Why are you afraid to engage in these battle of ideas?
So what do you think we do? What should we do? Have you heard any good solutions? How do we fix this? Because we're really only playing to our own tribe. If you're only hearing about it on Fox News, CBN, the Glenn Beck program, you're playing, right. You're preaching to the choir.
Well, you know, it is an uphill battle, but I think we have to kind of remain steadfast. And I think, you know, look, victory is for the bold. So you have to fight. And the good news is, in this day and age with the technology, it's never been easier for somebody to create a message and get it out there. Now, the flip side of that is, because it's never been easier, there's a proliferation of stories and film. So it takes more to rise above and get noticed. And that's where you do need the marketing. But, you know, you can – I will say this. Facebook actually has been very even-handed and fair with us. And
shut up. Really?
Yeah, the page has been up for, you know, for months, and we've had 17 million trailer views. And I've had some friends say to me, when I told them that the film was on Facebook, they were like, oh, my God, how did you manage to keep that up? So, you know, look, I don't know if we slip through the cracks, but, you know, when Ted Cruz has these hearings, when we continue to put pressure on, I think that's what we have to do. And, I just think that we have to not be afraid to push for what we want and make sure, you know, stories are told on both sides.
What are you going to do with the film now?
Well, it's out in theaters. You know, we have an A-plus cinema score, which only a couple of films receive every year. That means people who actually saw the movie loved it. And that people that I think span the ideological divide.
Hang on just a second on that. Let me ask you this. Did you at any time worry that this thing would be either a dirge or it would be one of those things where people would think, oh, geez, I should go see that movie, but I just don't want to go sit through an abortion movie. I mean, you hit the right balance to where you actually feel good leaving the audience or leaving theater.
You know, it's an interesting question. I don't know whether we considered that possibility. I think the filmmakers just made the movie that they thought needed to be made, and they trusted that, you know, if they did it right, people would come, and they have. So, you know, we opened in fourth place, defying all expectations opening weekend. We were in seventh place last weekend, and now in our third weekend, we were in 10th place on Sunday. And, you know, we're competing with big studio tentpoles like Shazam and Captain Marvel and Dumbo.
Yeah.
So, you know, the next step is going to be DVD and streaming, and we've had a lot of people approach us because they want to get those rights. So we're in the midst of discussing those deals now. So hopefully, you know, the next 3 to 4 months we'll be out there on DVD and more people will have access.
Any idea of Netflix, Amazon?
Well, you know, we don't know. We hope so.
Can't imagine why not.
We hope so. You know, if they really represent all of America, you would think that they would want to have this movie on and they would want to show both sides. So we're optimistic, but, you know, if we get stonewalled, then I guess we'll pursue it ourselves.
If you get stonewalled, let me know, will you?
I absolutely will. And, you know, the filmmakers are very grateful for your support, and you've been a real stalwart, so thank you.
No, not a problem. Thank you very much, Steve. Appreciate it.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
So, let me ask you, Stu, did you watch Game of Thrones last night?
I did. I did my duty.
You did your duty.
First episode or moment I've ever watched of Game of Thrones last night.
What'd you think?
I was very confused.
You're very confused.
Yes, I have some notes.
Okay, here's Stu's review of Game of Thrones.
We have some good... Oh, there we go. Good Game of Thrones music. Okay, first of all...
This is nothing like good Game of Thrones music.
No, this is about the level of my review here.
Okay, good.
The theme animation's really long.
Really long. Yes,
I believe
it
it's still going from the episode I was watching.
Yes, okay. Not
it's
important very long. To the storyline.
Okay, so I kind of came up with a cast of characters.
All right, good.
There's Blondie in white. You got ugly or black hair woman. You've got guy with goatee. You've got guy with beard. You've got angry elf. Red hair woman and the boy band looking teen.
Okay.
Now, if I'm following it
I'm
right.
I'm not sure.
The boy band looking teen is the son of the goatee guy, maybe? Not sure about that. I think I'm pretty sure that Winterfell is a place.
Yes.
Okay. The goatee guy may have been the king of Winterfell.
No.
Okay.
Well,
but he's not anymore. He was, but then wasn't not anymore. Potentially.
Well, yes, yes.
Okay. The North.
Can you stop this music? This music is
no. This is
worse
perfect.
Than this is worse than your review.
This
which is
rocking. The North might be the same as Winterfell. The same place, maybe? They're
the same
describing?
Area, okay, yeah. Right. Winterfell is in the north.
Okay. And by the way, spoiler alerts here, just in case we get into anything.
So far, I haven't really understood much.
Okay.
So my
understanding now is that Angry Elf, Goatee, Blondie, and Redhead are all on the same team?
Yes.
Okay. Blondie seems to be like a Siegfried and Roy of dragons.
Yes.
Okay.
All
See?
Right. Good,
I'm good,
good
at this.
Got it.
Angry Elf may have been married to Redhead.
Yes.
Okay. People seem a lot more attractive than I would expect from their difficult circumstances.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Goatee and ugly peasant girl hug and they like the same sword. That happened at one point.
Yes. It's yes.
Okay.
You've missed some of the nuance okay. of that relationship.
Okay.
Goatee guy yeah. and ugly girl like the same sword, I guess, yes.
Okay, so there's another queen. She looks kind of like a female Mick Jagger, maybe combined with Robin Wright. Do you know who I'm talking about? Maybe not.
Think, right.
Great line. If you want a whore, buy one. If you want a queen, earn one. That's a great freaking line.
Yeah, that's a great line. Is that the Mick Jagger looking?
That's the Mick Jagger lady.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm right on that. A guy is interrupted when having sex with three women, and he seems to be only moderately upset about it, which I feel like you'd be a little more.
I zip past those, so I don't
okay,
know.
Okay, that happened. Let's see. Really impressive teeth for the era, I thought.
Yes,
was
yes.
something.
Yes.
Some guy in a wheelchair and the boy band guy looked back at each other at the end, and that seemed important. I don't know about that.
I now know the
okay.
boy band.
And then finally, at one point, I did fall asleep, and I just woke up to someone being lit on fire while alive.
Okay.
Screaming.
Well,
so that's
kinda what if you missed Game of Thrones, why even watch it? I mean,
right, you got the whole thing right there.
You got the whole thing, and. Oh, really? You nailed it, Stu. You nailed it.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
You know what's amazing to me is the University of North Carolina, Duke, UNC, is the place that was on fire because it was racist. Except it wasn't. But the press covered it like crazy without any facts. Once the facts came out, next. Now Duke, University of North Carolina, is having another problem. Except this time, no one's paying attention to it. Except Ami Horowitz, a friend of the program and documentary filmmaker. Ami, welcome to the program.
Always a pleasure, Glenn.
So, what is happening at Duke?
Look, let me back up and kind of explain kind of genesis of what happened. I was sitting on Bondi Beach in Australia, and I was just scrolling through the internet, and I saw this joint conference between Duke and UNC, ostensibly about the conflict in Gaza. So immediately I knew, okay, this is clearly going to be an Israel hate fest. So I went there to kind of cover it to see kind of how anti-Israel it was. Was it going to be balanced at all? What I didn't expect to find was absolute and egregious open anti-Semitism throughout this conference, right? And I can't understate how big this conference was. It's a joint conference between Duke and UNC, two of the most prestigious schools in the country. Every major department and school sponsored, the School of Law, the School of Medicine, the School of Pharmacy, department, every single department and school sponsored it. And it also got a $250,000 grant from the U.S. government.
Oh, my gosh. For what?
For anti-Semitism. For anti-Semitism, Glenn. And I don't mean the anti-Semitism of, hey, you know, I hate Israel, so therefore I'm an anti-Semite, right? That's one thing. And by the way, just to be clear, if you hate Israel at the exclusion of other quote-unquote bad actors, Iran, North Korea, Sudan, by the way, just so you know, you're an anti-Semite. But let's not have that debate or argument. I'm talking about I went to the conference and I started asking students and administrators and professors a simple question. I said, does Jewish money control the U.S. government? I probably talked to 40 or 50 students, and with the exception of two, and I know that number because it was only two, everybody else said, of course, Jewish money controls the U.S. government. They control decisions around the world. A basic, one of the most damaging anti-Semitic tropes you could imagine. If it only stopped there, Glenn. Because the next thing that happened is they had the main entertainment for the evening, right, that they flew in from Israel was a Palestinian-Israeli rapper, an Israeli Arab, but they call themselves, you know, Palestinian Arabs now, Palestinian Israelis now. So he gets up there and he proclaims to this packed auditorium, packed. He says, this is my anti-Semitic song. I'm thinking, okay, I don't know, maybe he's joking. What the hell is he talking about? And then he starts to rap, this horrific rap, and he continues to egg the audience on by saying, guys, you're not being anti-Semitic enough. Let's bring it up to a 10. Let's take it up to Mel Gibson levels anti-Semitism. And the crowd is going wild. They're singing and cheering him along the song. And he ends this thing with, guys, you guys are beautifully anti-Semitic. Thank you for not letting me be anti-Semitic alone. Okay? And the whole while, the head of the guy who brought the conference to put the conference together, a guy who works for UNC, a professor there, an administrator there, he's sitting there smiling the entire time. Glenn, it was one of the most egregious, disgusting events I have ever witnessed in my life. And you know, I've seen some bad stuff.
Okay, I'm going to play the audio. This is part of the audio in the video that you captured at Duke UNC.
I'm Ami Horowitz, and I'm here on the campus of the University of North Carolina, where UNC and Duke are holding a joint conference on the conflict in Gaza. So I came here to get a sense of the perspectives of the people attending the conference. This was a major conference with hundreds of students, professors, and administrators who spent a weekend bashing Israel and whitewashing the terrorist organization, Hamas. If it only stopped there. This is a professor who I asked about her views on the spate of attacks in New York by black teens on Jews and synagogues.
Blacks have a lot of also reason to be angry at Jews now. Oh,
the conference wouldn't allow me to film inside, so my sound guy set me up with a hidden mic. With very little prodding, the veneer of being anti-Israel in an effort to hide their hatred of Jews was easily scratched away and devolved into open anti-Semitism. I first asked them about the most powerful modern anti-Semitic trope. Does Jewish money control U.S. government policy?
U.S. government dollars. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Not you guys. Jewish lobbyists are very rich.
The Jewish lobby is influencing our government and how that's changing U.S. policy. That's
why I'm here. Strictly no.
Wow.
For everyone.
With you on that one.
They're influencing our politics.
You know, the money rules the world.
Yeah.
No, meaning like makes the decision.
I appreciate your courage.
Oh, this is interesting what you are doing, right?
Yeah.
Impressive.
I'm Jewish. I don't know. Is
yeah, I could already tell. You didn't have to tell me.
I don't take offense to that at all.
No. I mean, I appreciate people who are questioning their own background.
Look at the treatment of Ethiopian Jews, right? Jews that are supposedly in the club, but they're Ethiopian. They're black. Like refugees who come to Israel, assuming it's, you know, it's a Jewish state, have actually been sterilized in the past.
Or you're telling me that the Jewish government sterilized Ethiopian Jews. Mm-hmm. Coming into Israel.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And then the featured entertainment for the event came on stage. He proceeded to, well, let's let the video do the talking.
Anti-Semitism. Yeah, okay. So this is my introduction. I know it sounds R&B stuff, but don't think of Rihanna when you sing it. Think of, don't think of Beyonce. Think of Mel Gibson.
Oh my God.
Go that anti-Semitic. Just fly it together, because I need your help. I cannot be anti-Semitic alone. I'm in love with a Jew. Oh!
I'm in love with a Jew.
You look beautifully anti-Semitic.
This is crazy.
I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
Why?
The director does not want you. You know, he used to be conducting, so I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
But I have to ask you to leave.
Don't have to call the police.
Are we causing trouble?
We don't understand what your intentions are.
We're still asking you to leave the premises, sir.
Just days after the conference, swastikas were found on campus. 38 of the largest departments and schools at the University of North Carolina sponsored this event. It also got a federal grant of nearly $250,000. They should all be ashamed.
Wow. Ami, that is crazy. As somebody who knows history, and you being Jewish, you know this history. Were you afraid? I mean, was this like, was this something that like goes right to the center of your being of, oh my gosh, here it is again?
It goes right to my core. Look, as you're alluding to, Jewish history is replete with pogroms, massacres that have occurred because of events like this, honestly. Now, I'm not saying this is going to lead to a pogrom, although it did lead to a when I released that video, there was that one that was, I mentioned the incident where they're printing swastikas in some dormitories. But in the days that followed the release of the video, the anti-Semitism has increased, and there were anti-Semitic posters put up in the library. But these are the kind of events that lead to significant problems for Jews. And what's so important to point out here is this did not happen. I know this is obvious, but I think it bears repeating. This did not happen in some kind of Ku Klux Klan rally that happened to Ocot, right? This is at two of our most prestigious universities in this country. And, you know, we're used to the usual suspects of anti-Semitism coming from neo-Nazis, radical Islamists, right? We all know that. I've reported on it, right? We know that's clear. But what we're seeing, and this is not a trend that's, by the way, happened in the last 2 years. It's over a 10-year trend. We're seeing that this is coming from the left, okay, from the alt-left, if you will. And we're not just seeing it in the halls of academia. We're seeing it in the halls of Congress. You don't think Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, they're not partly responsible for this? Of course. They're allowing this. You know, I love when they blame the president for allowing coarseness into our dialogue, okay? That is nothing compared to what we're hearing from the halls of Congress. And now we're seeing the halls of academia. And yes, this is something that troubles me to my core, Glenn.
Ami, one of the reasons why we didn't stop the Holocaust is, in my opinion, FDR was a racist and a bigot. In many ways, he was with the Japanese and he was with Jews. And Morgenthau tried to talk to the president about it, but FDR's response was always the same. And it was the same in Europe and in Germany. And I heard it on that tape and it chilled my blood. Well, these fill in the blank on the videotape, it was blacks, have a lot of reasons to be angry at the Jews. That is exactly what was said in Germany, then Europe, and in our own White House when we did nothing. Well, they brought it upon themselves. They got greedy, and they might start talking about the bankers. That's a ruse. They mean all Jews. They mean all Jews. Ami, I pray that people will wake up, and I thank you so much for your bravery. God bless you.
It's always my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you, Glenn.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.